Welcome to another session with the Market Dominance Guys, a program exploring all the high-stakes speed bumps and off-ramps of driving to the top of your market, with our host, Chris Beal from Connect and Sell, and Corey Frank from Branch 49. In this episode of Market Dominance Guys, Chris and Corey are joined by special guest Griffith McGowan, a recent college graduate navigating the world of sales job hunting. The trio delves into the challenges and opportunities faced by young professionals seeking to launch their sales careers, with a particular focus on the crucial role of mentorship. Griffin shares his experiences interviewing with various companies and the valuable lessons he's learned, while Chris and Corey offer insights on what employers look for in new hires and the skills needed to succeed. The conversation also explores the idea that interviewees are not just looking for a job, but are essentially hiring a boss or mentor to guide them through their professional journey. Packed with wisdom gained from decades of experience, this episode is a must-listen for recent grads, mentors, and interviewers alike. Join us for this episode. New grads, you're the product. Choose your buyer.
Welcome to another episode of the Market Dominance Guys with Corey Frank from Branch 49 and, as always, the sage of sales, the prophet of profit, the Hawking of Hawking, the CEO of Connect and Sell, Chris Beal. Good afternoon, Chris. How are you?
Hey, just finished watching Oppenheimer. So that Hawking of Hawking thing goes pretty deep right now. I'm into the physics.
Really? Okay, we'll have to think of one that rhymes my alliteration for O, the blank of Oppenheimer of, I don't know, origination. How about that? Sales origination. So, Chris, we have a special guest. I think this is a first for us in our 230, 40 episodes plus of the Market Dominance Guys, because we talk about at Branch 49 and certainly a Connect and Sell is what you've helped us build here is the term you coined, which is a finishing school for future CEOs. And today we have Griffin McGowan, who is a future CEO, I think, from all senses and from what we know about. No pressure, Griffin, but we want to track your progress on LinkedIn here over the years. And Chris, you have an interesting story about how you know Griffin. And then we want to hear from Griffin about what stage in this finishing school are you at? And what is this concept of a finishing school? And what are the pieces that maybe you're missing or that Chris and I certainly can help contribute to newer folks who are entering into profession? So welcome, Griffin. And Chris, how do we know Griffin and why is he in a hot seat here at the Market Dominance Guys?
Well, the short version of the story is I got fired, I think, on, I can't remember what day it was, probably Christmas Eve or something like that, from Aptara when they decided to sell the company. And I said, we don't need a senior vice president of product innovation anymore. Who does need one of those anyway, when you really think about it? But I had the job. And so I was flying back from the East Coast, where I used to commute back and forth between here and the West Coast and there. And I was sitting next to somebody that I just hit it off with. And we had this great conversation for the 6 hours it takes to fly into the wind from one coast to another. And that was Brian McGowan, Griffin's dad. And we talked about venture capital. We talked about building businesses. We talked about all manner of things. You can talk about a lot in 6 hours. And so, okay, that was fine. And we did some things later. Brian helped us out at Connect and Sell in the commercial real estate arena. Got us a great meeting with JLL. I learned that commercial real estate is a world where they just don't care about their salespeople. And so they'd hardly want to help them with something like Connect and Sell, but it was fascinating. And we had a thesis and we ran at it and had a great time. And then a couple of years ago, Griffin, you can tell the story. Did you reach out to me? It had to be your dad basically said, look, I don't know very many good people in business, but I know this guy is semi-okay, but better than nothing. So why don't you chat with him or something like that?
Yeah, definitely. So it was my junior year of college. I was planning on doing an internship at a big company, but right after hopping out of COVID, a lot of the internships I was looking at were online internships, remote, and didn't believe I'd really get that great experience. Doing an online remote interview, it'd be better to be in person in the office. So my dad thought of the idea, why don't I put you through my own little just background of meeting with a bunch of people, understanding how business works, getting that little internship feeling. And one of the things he specifically focused on was reaching out to his network. That's huge. So that summer I spent probably 2 or 3 months talking to 100-ish people, like-minded individuals like yourself, from CEOs to CTOs to people just getting into the business world, just trying to understand and pick their brain a little bit, learn their background, get some recommendations. I wasn't sure where I was going in my career yet. Was looking in finance, was looking in real estate, was looking in investment banking. So it was just trying to put together the pieces before graduation. And I know we got the chance to talk. You recommended some great books. I went through your background about getting into sales. And now that I've graduated last May, I've chosen the path of going into sales, understanding business, understanding the sales cycle. So that's where I ended up.
And you went to a great school at University of Alabama, right? In the business school.
Yes, and, so graduated from the Culver House College of Business there. Big school, big football program. So it was awesome going there.
Sure. Well, this will be good for Chris, for you and I, is because you have great pedigree, you have great raw material, and moving into sales, what Chris and I want to do is help understand what needs to be thrown out and what needs to be added to this arsenal of wisdom and knowledge and skills for the next couple of years or so as you establish yourself in sales. Does that sound okay, Chris? I think that'd be fun to explore this with Griffin.
Sounds outstanding. And by the way, Griffin, I didn't know you talked to so many people. I have to say, I don't know another person who has executed a summer program that's got that kind of, I don't know, range, spectrality, depth. I mean, that's a lot of conversations. Connect and Sell, our motto is conversations matter. You went out and got them. That alone, I mean, who needs to interview you, right? I mean, I'd be done. It's like, okay, well, whatever that is, go do more of that, but do it on my team. I may actually poach you away from whatever it is that you're going to be doing, but you probably want to work for a better company than ours. So,
yeah. My dad always kind of worded around the bigger the network you have, the more opportunities you have. He's been my mentor through this whole process. So getting out and talking to as many people made me more comfortable having conversations even like this one, understanding background, picking up on some terms. So it's just overall increased my education.
Mm-hmm. Well, the great Harvey McKay, he's always asked, what is the one piece of advice as a new grad, as a new entry into sales, or even any profession, is the key to his success that he would impart on folks is your network is your net worth. And the more you can focus on your network, the more that your net worth will be year after year. And I thought that's a great piece of advice that he's preached for many years. So let's start, Griffin, with, I'm curious, at the University of Alabama in the College of Business, was there a culture, was there a mentorship or an urging to move into the sales arena at a major university like this coming out of the College of Business? Or was it business writ large as this behemoth, this nondescript entity of commerce in general?
So I would say it was business as a whole. Depending on where you wanted to take that, you can take certain classes that lean more towards others. At the time, I was really undecided, so I wasn't sure the path I was going to take. I have friends and even colleagues now that kind of chose more of the path going into real estate, going into finance, going directly into sales. So there's so many classes that offer it. Even picking a nice minor, you can really dive down and do it deep a little bit more. The mentorship was great, though. The teachers were great. All the classes were perfect. Just at the time, I went the more broader route with the major. I was just trying to figure out the path I wanted to take.
Sure. No, I understand that. But it's something that I think that Chris and I have seen and we've talked about a few times in our personal conversations over the years is that business has nothing to do with sales. Of course, it has everything to do with sales, right? But somehow, most of these major universities will give you the imprimatur, the certificate, the diploma, the degree, and say, okay, go forth, young traveler, into the world with this business degree. But somehow that this concept, this science of sales, is something that is picked up on the street. It's picked up on Instagram in 60-second bursts, necessarily from the market dominance guys. Right, Chris, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. I mean, I've been working on occasion, been privileged to get to do some stuff with Dr. Howard Dover at the University of Texas, Dallas, who runs one of the greatest sales programs, maybe the greatest university level sales program in the world. It's truly about sales. And they learn theory, they learn practice, they learn from really solid folks who know what they're talking about. They learn from yahoos like me. And it's very sales focused, which is interesting and unusual. I do think, and again, I never went to business school. If physics was hard enough for me, business would have been completely overwhelming. But I don't have any experience with it directly as a student. But my impression has been business schools will nibble around the edge of sales, but they won't hit it head on as a true discipline that you can learn deeply and that is hyper important. Your entire career is going to depend on it. And yet when you go to the other end of the spectrum and you say, okay, let's talk to a bunch of CEOs. One, they almost all came up through sales. It's unusual otherwise. And two, they have sales chops. They can hold a conversation with a stranger. I'll go back to my meeting Griffin's dad. So you get two guys like us sitting on an airplane for 6 hours. Well, you're going to have a conversation, and it's going to be a comfortable conversation. It's going to be far-reaching. It had a lot of personal elements to it, actually. That's one of the things that you learn, I think, when you're moving in business, moving up, moving out and around, is it's okay to be a person. You don't have to be some sort of a statue or something, but you can be yourself. And that's going to be helpful. That's actually going to be part of the thing that you're doing. So I think it's fascinating. I think sales is starting to make its way into business schools formally, but it's still considered to be more of an art that's picked up in the rough and tumble than a science that you can learn, like you could learn finance and modeling and stuff like that, I guess is what I would call it. So to me, I've gotten an opportunity to talk to a lot of young people about their careers and older people about their careers. And I always say the same thing, which is in business, you're responsible for helping folks get to a point where they can accept your help. That turns out to be a big part of business because everybody's busy and everybody's busy doing whatever they're doing. And if you can be helpful, you got to break through that somehow. It's change management where it's not your organization, it's somebody else's. And the number one thing you need is you need to be respected in the world of business. If you've never sold anything, it's hard to get a lot of respect.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and the art of getting to the point where you've sold something, right? We see this a lot, Chris, right? That people wander like a ship without a rudder from sales gig to sales gig to sales gig. It takes 3-4 sales gigs where they maybe have 6 months, 18 months in before they settle or they find the one that they're now going to spend the next 3, 4, 5 years in. And it's as if they're looking for something and then they settle for something. Or it's that, hey, I wasn't successful at the sales gig because my manager, the leads, the market, the comp plan, the commute, what have you. And they do that a couple of times until they realize, wait a minute, I think that I've realized what the problem is, and it's the person in the mirror, and I better plant my feet. And so what a lot of great sales mentors, sales skills are out there on the market today, if there's one thing over the last 15, 20 years, Chris, right, it's that there is no excuse for a new grad not to have education in this profession without spending the thousands of dollars that you would have to do for a sales certification. For the price of a couple of overdue charges at your local library or for a YouTube subscription, which is free, you should have no problem imparting some of the basics. So let's get into it, Griffin. So you just interviewed with a number of companies, but particularly some of the interviews that you had just recently. I think Chris and I in the audience are curious of what are the type of questions for a sales role that the sales folks, leadership, execs, peers, et cetera, were asking somebody with you, with your qualifications, to find out if there's a real snug fit in their organization.
So definitely, yeah. The first questions, of course, they're going to ask is why sales? They want you to be able to understand that question and be able to express that question in a way that why you're interested to it. Because, of course, they want to hire somebody that's hungry for sales. And then that correlates into other questions about what skills do you possess that are like skills. And then going into other questions about tough situations, if you've dealt with sales in the past, either if it's a smaller job or working as a professional job, just trying to pick your brain a little bit. Ask you those tough, confusing questions, and then really see if you're able to bring up experiences and if you're able to sell yourself, I would say.
Anything surprising about some of the interview questions that you've been asked?
I would say some companies that I've interviewed at, some of the questions are a little, I would say, overcoming a tough situation. Some of the questions don't correlate directly with sales. Some of the questions are a little too out of the ballpark sometimes. I've had weird questions when it comes to tell us a time that you were last stressed out at work, which I understand how that would correlate to sales, but it's more one of those questions that I believe it's if you search up the list of 25 basic interview questions, it aligns in that way.
Well, that's interesting. Let me ask you, and Chris can chime in on this, but from your perspective, Griffin, from this hunt, this search you're on to find the next gig in the profession of sales, do you think that it is more nature or more nurture to succeed in the profession? And what do you think the folks who are interviewing you at these larger companies, what do you think they think the answer to that is? And I'd love Chris's opinion on this as well.
I would say it's both in the middle of that nature-nurture. I think you really have to be driving and outgoing when it comes to it. And the most difficult part about interviewing for a sales job is since COVID, we've noticed that the interview process has turned into online interviews, not as much being held in person. And I think it's difficult to be able to sell yourself through a Zoom call and especially go through all these interview processes. It just doesn't work as well. I think more in person is where it aligns.
On that, because I mean, this whole Zoom thing has been fascinating to me. I mean, for one thing, we've been running this company remotely since 2014. So we got pretty used to not being together because I wanted top talent and I didn't want to pay for two floors of an office building that was a long commute to get there and kept the top talent far away where I could get them anywhere, right? What I learned through that process is it's possible to be very human and very open and vulnerable and to have fun with people, whether you're in person or whether you're on a Zoom, but you're going to have to bring it. It's you who has to bring that, we'll call it a softness, a willingness to have fun with people, even though you're a long distance away and you don't get to sit down right with them. And in a way, it's almost easier with that attitude, right? And as Corey, I mean, my approach to talking to people is just to talk to them and see what happens. One of the things that I posted about this yesterday, I think one of the things I think is weird about sales and weird about a lot of business is there's this idea that we should know the outcome of the conversation before we start the conversation. That is, the purpose of the conversation is for me to get what I want, right? You decide to sign the contract or whatever it happens to be. That's the hopefully foregone conclusion. And yet the beauty of conversations is they always offer an opportunity to discover something that's completely unexpected, and that's where new value shows up.
We'll be back in a moment after a quick break. Connect and Sell. Welcome to the end of dialing as you know it. Connect and Sell's patented technology loads your best sales folks up with 8 to 10 times more live qualified conversations every day. And when we say qualified, we're talking about really qualified, like knowing what kind of cheese they like on their Impossible Whopper kind of qualified. Learn more at connectandsell.com. And we're back with Corey, Chris, and Griffin.
So I'm wondering, Griffin, did you feel like in any of these interviews that anybody was trying to let the completely unexpected come out of your mouth? Or did you feel like there's going, okay, one from column A, one from column B, which was it? And then they're going to go talk about you among themselves and say, well, in this area was like this, and this area is like this. Whereas you could imagine folks talking about somebody and going, oh my God, that guy was just like, it was to like being in the same room with him. And there's going to be a lot of selling on Zoom. We better pick this guy up. So what did you feel like? Were they checking boxes or were they having fun?
I would say it's a lot of checking boxes of what I've noticed. You can tell the questions that they're asking. You can see them staring to the screen next to them, and you can hear them on the keyboard or writing on the side, taking notes. I would say a lot of the interviews are structured like that. They're given a set of questions to ask, seeing how you respond to them, and then formulating and talking to the team after to come up with more of a conclusion. I would say only some of the interviews I'd have that I've seen more really just trying to understand you as a person by just having natural conversation with you. Some of it seems just very robotic.
Fascinating.
Have you been, again, without naming certainly any of these names, but when you've interviewed at some of these larger organizations, have you sat in awe of the person who is interviewing you and thought, my gosh, this is a scientist, this is a master craftsman, this is somebody who I want to emulate, epitomize, rise to that level from how they handle themselves and how they, the charisma, how they light up a room, albeit virtually, how they have the master, the art of the conversation? Or has it been candidly, maybe fairly underwhelming when you think of these large organizations should have the best rock stars on planet Earth?
I think it's a mixed batch of both. I've applied for smaller companies in soft and tech where all the way up to bigger companies. And it depends who you talk to. There's definitely been people that I've talked to that I've been blown away by, wanting to work right under them, even viewing them as a mentor, even just having a 20-minute conversation with them. And then other account executives I've talked to that just sound robotic, that you wouldn't even think they were in sales in the first place. So it's bouncing around within those interviews. You'll talk to somebody that's a rock star, then you'll talk to somebody that was just trying to get through the interview, hit all the boxes, and just do their job.
First of all, love to hear that. I think that's one of the pieces that I think that I've learned from Chris over these 20 plus years of knowing him and as a mentor. And one of the pieces of advice that I received early on is, you choose your boss. You're hiring for a boss and a mentor as much as you're hiring for the job. And whether it's a small organization, but somebody who's a dynamic, esteemed craftsman, I would take that even at less pay than going for the resume builder, which I think would be the traditional VC-funded company, Chris, right, with the fast track and the folks who are going through the robotic mentoring. Sometimes we chase the vanity metrics of what shows on our LinkedIn or our resume versus really what's going to do the best work to building our network down the road. Chris, any thoughts?
Well, to me, it's the whole game. I mean, the fact of the matter is, there are some people that are just dynamite to work with, where the freedom that you have to bring your best out, to explore while doing. So you're going to be held to a high doing standard. That's a good thing, right? And my standard, which is, if you're joining in order to advance your career, I'm going to fire you immediately anyway. So that's not going to work out. We're going to actually accomplish something together, and it better be something almost everybody would fail at. And that's the fun of it. If that's fun for you, then let's go do that thing, right? If it's not, then it's probably going to be worse than you think. So the question of what are you getting? I mean, you're actually buying something when you take a job with somebody. You're buying that boss. That's what you're buying. What are you buying them with? You're buying them with a chunk of your career, with time. And time you can't get back. So it's a very important purchase that you're making. And I think a lot of people don't realize that when you are looking around for companies to join up with and people to work with, you're the buyer. They think that they're the buyer. Trust me, it's like when you're raising venture capital, right? You're the product. They don't have the product. All they have is money and time. It's not that interesting, but you're the product. You're the differentiated offering. That's why they have to talk to so many, and you may have to talk to a lot of them. They got to talk to more of you. So I think it's the same kind of dynamic. And I think it's when times are tough for getting certain kinds of jobs. And Griffin, you mentioned before we started, this is not the easiest time in the history of life to get a sales job. Right? A lot of people are going, hey, give me somebody with the big Rolodex, or give me somebody who's got the depth in my industry, or whatever it is that they've got going on. And they've been doing cuts. And so especially in the SDR kind of end of things, which has become the traditional entry point, teams have gotten smaller. I don't know if the standards have gotten higher. They should, but the number of opportunities is, and the flow rate has gone down a little bit. But I think the most important thing for anybody to remember is you're purchasing that boss. Now, one of the challenges I've always had with big companies, just and why I haven't worked for a lot of them, is you don't know what's going to happen to your boss. Your boss is going to get reorged to some other part of the world. My wife, Helen, had a deal at Microsoft where she ended up with a switch out of bosses, and it just became untenable. And then she managed to get back to the previous boss, and then they reorged around something completely new, which is all this AI stuff. And here she is now starting her own company. But when you think about it, that's what you're buying. You are purchasing a boss, and you're purchasing them for as long as you to get them, which is, we don't know how long that is. And it's probably the most important purchase you ever make. People talk about a house is nothing compared to a boss.
For sure. So with that, Griffin, what would you describe, maybe speaking personally, but also from maybe some of the peers that you graduated school with, what are folks at your stage of your career, what are you looking for in a boss?
You're just looking for somebody that can give you a lot of guidance, that can really help support your career. Talking to other people, I've noticed that some of my peers are looking for a job just with high income where they can make money straight out of school. Some are looking for just that great entry-level job that can really position and set them up for a great opportunity into the future. For me, I'm just looking to work around smart people, work at a great company, have a mentor, and of course, at the end of the day, make money. Work somewhere with uncapped commission where the sky's the limit of how I can earn money.
Ooh, uncapped commission. See, right there, that's a good answer to a good thing to say in any sort of interview situation around sales. It's like, hey, if the product's great enough and the opportunity is big enough, I work just for commission. You ever want to get a sales job, just go ahead and say that. I would go ahead and I would just work for straight commission. They're going to go, ooh, I respect you already, right? I used to work as a fuller brush man in Phoenix in the summer. I was desperate to do something. I needed to make some money like within a week or two. And I found myself with my first all commission job. And it was so interesting because it's like so many things in life. Until you step across that threshold, you really don't know what that feels like. And what it feels like is going to determine what you act like. So that was a great answer right there.
Absolutely.
It wasn't even an interview question. It was just a great
You're good stock. That's right. Well, let's keep that vein going for another question or two here, Griffin. What would you describe, let's say you're having a chat with my good friend Chris and myself here, and we were two sales leaders, and we asked you, what's the strongest part of your sales process, this arsenal you bring to our organization? You're attracted by the mentorship and the untapped commission, maybe based off of the recent grad. A lot of folks are interested in the flexibility and the balance, et cetera, which are admirable things. But when you look at your sales arsenal, the things you need to succeed to tap into that untapped commission, let's drill down into your specific skill set. If we were to rank, do a 23andMe to do a stress test on your sales skills that you have as a recent grad, what are you better at than others? What's the strongest part of your Griffin McGowan skill set?
I would say the big thing I've been focusing on is empathy and active listening. Bringing that into sales, having empathy, being able to connect with the prospect that you're talking to, and then also being able to listen, understand their problem, keep your mouth quiet, let some silences go out, but to let them overall talk. Because if you're going to be on the call with a prospect and you're dominating the call the whole time and not letting them speak and express things, you're not going to progress that any longer.
Well, that's fascinating, because that's what I've observed in this chat with you thus far, this 30 minutes that we spent, is you are an active, engaged listener. You don't step on other people's lines. And I think that's admirable and to a large degree. I would push back just colloquially, just conversationally, that when you're engaged in a good debate, a good conversation, that there does need to be an element where there is some tension. Because if there's too much active listening, where there's a pause and it's a question, answer, question, answer, question, answer, the status is diminished. The supplicative behavior, although not overt, is there. So I would just, Christian, I don't know, Rich, what your thoughts are on that, but you're a phenomenal listener already. We can tell, and just knowing you and meeting you. But I think in the realm of sales, especially as a newer sales rep representing a product, and if you're talking to a seasoned executive like Chris, in a discovery call, there needs to be this authenticity in a conversation. And I think there does need to be a little bit of tension introduced with some control. But Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
Hey, when you're in sales, you're catching whales on 5-pound test line. You got to know when to let it run and when to set the hook. And I mean, it's a delicate business. There's no doubt about it. It's a lot more like, I don't know, it's like doing something like figure skating or something like that. It's like, it doesn't look like a big difference to the layperson whether you're landing on that inside edge or the outside edge, but one of them you go down and the other one you look great and things happen. There is a lot of delicacy in that balance between empathy, which you need. I mean, Griffin, you're dead right. You need it, right? And then the thing that you bring. So you have this baseline of, hey, I can listen. I like to listen. I like to know what's going on with you. But then you've got the question of, well, why are you talking to somebody in the first place unless there's some conflict between what they have and what they want? you wouldn't be having the conflict uncovering world without pissing anybody off too much, which is pretty interesting. So I hope it won't piss anybody off here. Going back to the beginning, I'm catching a ferry in 24 minutes. That is a 22-minute walk from here.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Well, I want to thank Griffin for coming on. I want to recommend anybody who's, by the time this drops, which will be like 2 or 3 days from now, he'll already have 10 job offers. But if you want to get a hold of him and make him a job offer, just, you know, based on this, which I think you should, I think he's easy to get a hold of, right? Griffin, how does somebody get a hold of you?
LinkedIn best, phone number, email. My LinkedIn's Griffin McGowan. Feel free to reach out there. My email is griffinmcgowan@gmail.com. Those are the best ways to contact me.
Wasn't crazy enough to put a cell phone out there. Just if anybody wants to know, my cell phone's 408-203-4321. Sometimes I answer, sometimes I don't. But when I do, it's very interesting.
That's right. Well, we look forward to following your journey here, Griffin, here at the Market Dominance Guys. We want to have you back and listen to your first weeks of onboarding and see how well you really tap into the untapped commission that you certainly will enjoy. So with that, with Griffin and for Chris Beal from the CEO of Connected Sell, this is Corey Frank from the Market Dominance Guys. Until next time.
Selling a big idea to a skeptical customer, investor, or partner is one of the hardest jobs in business. So when it's time to really go big, you need to use an uncommon methodology to gain attention, frame your thoughts, and employ a successful sequencing that is fresh enough to convince others that your ideas will truly change their world. From crafting just the right cold call screenplays to curating and mapping the ideal call list for your entire TAM, Branch 49's modern and innovative sales toolbox offers a guiding hand to ambitious organizations in their quest to reach market dominance. Learn more at branch49.com. Never miss an episode. Go to any of your favorite podcast venues and search for Market Dominance Guys or go to marketdominanceguys.com and subscribe.